There is a society in the US called Flat Earth Society, and they all believe that the earth is flat. That's why they call themselves Flat Earth Society. And they're totally convinced, no matter what you tell them, you tell them, well, all the scientific proof, they say it is all bunk. You show them pictures from space, you know, showing the earth is round, they say it's all false. But see, that kind of ignorance, they can manage, you know, unless they have to become astronauts or astronomers or somebody like that to have a, you know, it's an innocent belief. Okay, earth is flat. You don't want to believe it. So that kind of ignorance is not that bad. It's not going to hurt you. But we unfortunately suffer from a much greater ignorance, which is that I am this body. And that is the fundamental error in our basic thinking. And no matter how much you have heard from the teacher, no matter how many times I have heard, and how many times, you are still convinced, I am this body. And it becomes very hard, because from childhood we have been conditioned from multiple lifetimes. Even from the time when you were a little amoeba or a little fish or a little animal walking around, we always thought, I am this body. And this feeling is so deeply ingrained that a person will do anything to preserve and nourish this body. So whatever is required, I am required to do, I will do. Food, of course, you need clothing, you need shelter, you know, which is okay. But then the fear that, you know, I may lose it. So you accumulate more, you collect more food than you need, you collect more money that you need. You buy a bigger house, you buy a summer home and a winter home and a ski, you know, chalet and all that. Why? So I should have, you know, a place for me to live. And then this thirst goes on and on. You know, the more I want, the more, because I think I am this body, and the whole society and the media and the TV and the advertising all promote this concept. You know, without this new car, you are useless. Without this iPhone 5S, which has a fingerprint, which can identify you by your fingerprint, you don't have to. Without that, you know, life is no. So you are constantly acquiring, possessing, wanting, getting. And for the, not only as an individual, you know, each one of us, but the whole society, the whole human race, for the last 300 years has been working to take care of this body, right from the Industrial Revolution in the 17th century, the last 300 to 400 years. They're just producing more and more wealth, more, you know, better health and better houses and better clothes and air conditioning and computers. You say, why? That's good. What's wrong with that? No, that is very good. And we are not saying that we should halt material progress. But the question I need to ask is that, am I happy at this moment? You ask somebody, are you happy? You say, yeah, you know, I have a nice house. I have enough money. I can buy anything I want. I can go to the grocery store or the department store and buy goods from all over the world. On my computer, I can access any part of the world, what is happening. I can see pictures. I can get the news. I can communicate. I can travel, you know, by plane and by car, and now even into space. They're talking about traveling into space commercially. I have all that, and I have enough money. I have a retirement. I have a wife. I have a children, you know. But if you ask me, am I really happy? I'm not so sure. And it's not, and me, but how, and some of my friends, that, you know, their families are split. Husband is somewhere. Wife is somewhere. Children come to open home, empty homes, and they are obviously even worse off than I am. And I think to myself, am I happy? You know, do I have everything I want? In fact, there are so many parts of town I'm afraid to go at night. My children, they are afraid to go to school. In fact, even the teachers we find are afraid to go to school. Looks like most of the teachers, instead of teaching, their only purpose is to stay alive until they retire, because they don't know when a student will bring a gun or when some crazy. Talking about teachers, this person tells his mother, Mom, I don't want to go to school today. So she says, why, son? Why don't you want to go to school? You must go. No, mom, the teachers don't like me. The children all hate me. They call me names. I don't want to go to school. She says, no, son, you have to go to school. He says, why? She says, because you are the principal of the school. Anyway, so you ask this man, are you happy? And he says, not really, you know. And why is that? Why in this, you know, when we have created this beautiful technical world where we have everything, why do we feel that our life is not complete? The main problem is that for the past 300-400 years, our focus has been totally on the body. Taking care of the body, nourishing the body, feeding the body, maintaining the body. People live till 80, 90, 100. But they are living longer. But how to live is not being taught in our schools, in our colleges, in the workplace. Everything is geared towards technology and production. And they say, how about the mind? Well, people say, for the mind also, we don't have any problem. You are depressed. Here's the pill. Take it and you'll become undepressed. You are stressed out, agitated, take another pill. You get angry too much. So we think that either by pills or by technology or by internet and computers, we can solve the world's problems. But if you look at the world right now, divorce is increasing. In fact, the people of families who are living together are so few. Percentage-wise, it's much less than 50%. I think I heard was 65% of marriages in this country end in divorce. I don't know if it's true or not, but a large number do, or people don't even get married. Suicide is increasing. Drug abuse is rampant, you know. And if you talk to the physicians, how many people come to their office who are taking polypharmacies, you know, multiple psychiatric medicines, multiple pain medicines, and they are all the time stressed, and nobody has time. You know why? Because we have just focused on the body, mind, and intellect. And we have focused on improving the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, the whole universe. And that is why we have all these consequences. But the religions of the world tell us that we have a spiritual dimension, which here we have indicated by Om. And we are not only this body, but we are in reality a spirit. We are that consciousness. And that has been very much neglected by modern society, either by us, by the thinkers, by the philosophers, by the scholars. And that is what the problem is. And why should we know this spiritual dimension? Why should we know it? What is the benefit of that? What is the benefit of reading the Bhagavad Gita or the Bible or the Guru Granth Sahib or the Quran? Because it is said that everybody is looking for peace. Everybody is looking for happiness. Whatever I am acquiring, whatever I am possessing, whatever I am getting, whatever I am afraid of losing, it's all with the idea that this thing gives me happiness, gives me peace, and gives me bliss. But spirituality says that true peace and happiness can only be found when you reach that spiritual dimension, when you become one with that spiritual, which you can call as Brahman, you can call as God, Father in heaven, Allah, consciousness, Atman, soul, it doesn't matter. They're all different names of that one spiritual dimension which you need to wake up to. And that is the only way to peace and happiness. Sri Krishna in the 18th chapter very beautifully, after describing the nature of God and this reality which he calls as the substratum of the whole universe, consciousness, he says it very beautifully towards the end of the 18th chapter. He says, that state of consciousness, sharanam gacha, go to the refuge of the Lord, go within and find that true self. All your effort, put your body in that effort, put your mind in that effort, put your intellect, put all your faculties to realize that truth. Why should I do that? What is the benefit? He says, tat prasadat param shantim. He says, if you want true peace, true happiness, sthanam prapsyasi shashvatam, If you want that eternal peace, that eternal joy, that eternal bliss, not the bliss of acquiring a new dress or getting a new piece of jewelry or eating a new ice cream, but that permanent eternal bliss, that bliss which will never be disturbed. Nobody can come and disturb that bliss. Nobody can come and take it away from you, that peace, that joy. And we have found in the lives of great saints how many sorrows they had. Look at the life of Mirabai, and look at the life of Tukaram, and look at the life of Sant Gyaneshwar, and Narsimha Mehta, and Jesus, and Buddha. All of them had one after the other problems, but they remained steadfast in their faith, and the whole Roman Empire could not shake them. The whole armies were against them, but these saints stood firm. So he says, find that, and that is your true essence. That is what we have to approach. And in the chapter 13, it describes very well the difference between the matter and the spirit. My lower nature and my higher nature, called Kshetra and Kshetrajna. And the chapter 13 is said to be the essence of the Upanishads, the very essence of the Upanishad. Shri Krishna, in his discourse, I think 2 weeks ago, we had gone into details about these chapters, but I just kept the second one. In the 7th and 8th chapter, in the 6th, after talking about the technique of meditation, in the 7th and 8th chapter, he gave us the essence of the Upanishads. Talks about the higher and lower nature of man, and about the imperishable Brahman, that substratum, the consciousness, and all its qualities, and how one can reach. And then from 9th to 12th chapter, he gets a little bit sidetracked. I mean, he's still giving the message, but the message is more in response to Arjuna's question. Arjuna wants to know, how am I to know you, Lord? Where am I to see you? I want to see the whole world in you. I want to be a true devotee. Who is a greater devotee? One who loves the form and the formless. So the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th chapters were geared towards the path of devotion, the path of love, and the path of knowing God and worshipping and loving, which are very, very beautiful, powerful chapters. And they were in response to Arjuna's, because Arjuna was not yet ready for that highest knowledge of the Upanishads. Krishna could see that. And so he lays the foundation for this in the chapters 9, 10, 11, and 12. And teaches him how to be a better devotee, better lover of the Lord. But then he never forgets that, what is my goal? To teach him who he is. Who are you? What is your goal? What is your purpose? So in the 13th chapter, he resumes his journey. So what he has spoken in the 7th and 8th, he's now connecting in the 13th and starting again with this essence of who you are. What is your true nature? What is the spiritual essence in you, and what is the material? We have to distinguish matter from spirit, because they have become so intermingled in our mind that we cannot distinguish where does matter end and where does spirit start, and what is spirit and what is matter. So the 13th chapter makes it very clear, Kshetra and Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogaha. So here Swami Chinmayananda shows us a very beautiful equation. See, if you have A plus B, and then you remove B, A plus B minus B is what? A. I think even if you have forgotten your math, but this much, we should be able to understand. A plus B minus B is A. So, Kshetrajna is the knower of the field. This consciousness, that total consciousness, that is I am, at this moment becomes a Kshetrajna, becomes a knower of the field. Kshetra is the field, and Kshetrajna is the knower of the field. Jna means knower. Kshetra means the field. So field is not only the playing field, but this whole universe is a field where we function. The world of objects, emotions, and thoughts is my body plays in the field of objects. My mind plays in the field of emotions. My intellect plays in the field of thoughts. In fact, in the second verse, which we shall do next week, Krishna says that this body is also a field. Idam shariram kaunteya kshetram ityabhidhiyate. Even this body is a field in which I, the consciousness, function. So it says kshetragnya, who is the knower of the field, when it becomes the total consciousness, when it becomes identified with this body, mind and intellect and starts working in the field of objects, emotions and thoughts, it becomes the jiva, the limited ego, the perceiver, feeler and thinker. So I, the consciousness, when I start working in the world, I identify myself with this body, mind and intellect, and then I get attached to objects, emotions and thoughts, they are mine, then I become a jiva, an individual ego. And then I get caught, I get bound, I get unhappy and happy. When things leave me, I become unhappy. When things come, I become happy. So what are we to do? We are not, nowhere we are saying that you should give up your clothes and give up your, you know, just put on orange clothes and give up your family and husband and wife and children, go off to the forest and resign your job. What the 13th chapter teaches us is how to function in the world but uncouple yourself. Continue to work in the world but work as the spirit, not as the body. It is just a change of attitude. That's why the, you know, karma yoga and bhakti and all were taught, because it is meant for us to uncouple our, you know, because right now it's so firmly bound. Just detach and continue to work. In fact, your work will become even more efficient. You'll become even more productive. You know, look at Swami Chinmayananda, how much he accomplished in his life. Look at Swami Vivekananda. Look at Buddha. Look at Jesus. Even though they lived short lives, but billions of people are benefiting from their teachings. So these people could do that because they could uncouple themselves. So that's what the equation A plus B minus B equals A. So kshetragnya, the knower of the field, minus the field, minus kshetra becomes nya, which is consciousness, which is pure knowledge. So we are not saying that you give up the field. You just uncouple yourself, detach yourself, and then continue to work, and then you'll become pure knowledge. That is the purpose of functioning. And this 13th chapter is so beautiful. It makes it very crystal clear. It's like two distinctions. One is, this is the field and this is the knower. And how to continue to work. That's why it's a very, very powerful, very beautiful chapter, because it gives us the essence of what the Upanishads were teaching. And that's why I'm looking forward to doing that. Today will be a short class. If there's any questions, we can discuss, or I can do the first verse, which is quite short. So we'll do that today, which is the introduction. Are there any questions or comments on what I have spoken so far?
Do you think there was a reason initially to think that you were the body because of the self-preservation?
I think so, yeah. For self-preservation, it is required, but then the scriptures are meant to tell us that you are a body and a spirit. And we have overly focused on the body. It's like when you're building, you know, lifting weights, you keep on lifting the upper body and your upper body becomes like this and your lower body is very skinny, then that person will be imbalanced. So that is what has happened to us. Yes, but I think that's a good point. For self-preservation, it is necessary, but not for, you know, permanent happiness. No, I think, as far as resources and things, you know, people may have been unhappy. But if you truly look at the people, life of the people who were living in the villages, or may not be that much, but say if you go back to the Vedic times or when the time of the rishis, when people lived in, you know, there were forests and then there were orchards and the land was plentiful and the people were few. And people used to live off the land. They would grow their food and they would, you know. And then there was not that much traveling and not that many, you know, big cities. You know, that's where all the problems, the slums and the gangs and the violence and all. So I think life was simpler. Maybe people died earlier and maybe they had different kind of problems. But I think the stresses of life I think is more, there were always problems, but I think it's a more a modern phenomenon. That's my opinion. If you truly go back, yeah, I think if maybe what you have to do is really go back to before all these cities were developed and when life was predominantly rural and, you know, less stressful, I think. At least what you read of that. Absolutely. You're living close to the earth. You know, they exercised, they ate fresh food, and they didn't have to go to the market to buy organic vegetables, spend an arm and a leg. Okay, we'll just do the first verse because we have today Ganesh Chaturthi. Ganesh Ji is worshipped as the remover of obstacles. And before we start any special prayer or any, you know, even build a house or a factory or whatever, we always worship. So we will be celebrating that after we end here. Chapter 13. Atha Trayodasho Dhyayaha. Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogaha. Arjuna Uvacha Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Kshetram Kshetrajna Mevacha Etat Veditum Icchami Jnanam Jneyam Cha Keshava. Actually, this verse is not there in all the Gita. Some of you may not have it in your books, or even if you do, but if you look at the ancient Bhagavad Gita, like what Shankaracharya ji wrote the commentary on, this verse was not there. It is also not there in Mahabharata. So it was not originally chanted by Sri Krishna. So we have to accept that. So they said, then how did this verse come in? So they said there was a great scholar named Madhusudan Saraswati. He was in the 16th century. He was from Bengal. Very great scholar of Sanskrit. And he actually was a Dvaitin. He loved God as a separate, me and God. You know, I love God as somebody separate from me. And he was a firm believer. And he said, you know, these people who preach Advaita, that God and you are one, everything is one totality, God is everywhere, I don't believe them. I need to argue with them. I need to criticize them and I need to put them down. So he said, I'm going to go to Banaras and learn about Advaita from the scholars. There was a Swami Ramtirth. And then I can, once I know Advaita, then I can defeat these people very easily. You know, it's like you have to know the enemy. So he went to study Advaita from this Swami Ramtirtha, and he was so surprised. He said, oh, this is the truth. This is reality. He was totally convinced in his view. And then he became a great proponent of Advaita. He kept, of course, his love for God. He was a very great saint. But it is interesting how when he realized the truth that there is only one reality, everything is just an expression of that, he was totally convinced. So he has put this verse in there. Why? Because the 13th chapter without this verse seems like a khichdi, like a hodgepodge of ideas. Why does Sri Krishna give all these ideas? When you have this verse, it ties up the whole 13th chapter beautifully. So we'll just give the commentary of that. And it's not very detailed. I have covered most of that in my introduction. So Arjuna Uvacha, Arjuna said, Keshava, in the last line, he calls Krishna Keshava. Keshava means he had long hair. If you look at Krishna's pictures, he always had long hair. Keshava also means the substratum of the Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Ka, and Isha. Ka represents Brahma, Aha represents Vishnu, and Isha represents Shiva. So he addresses Keshava as the total consciousness, because we know Krishna was an expression of that total Brahman. So he recognizes that you are that totality. O Keshava, he says, what do I wish to know? Prakritim Purusham Chaiva. In Sankhya philosophy, Gita of course follows the Sankhyan philosophy, There are two entities, Prakriti and Purush. Prakriti being matter and Purush being spirit. Matter, which is insentient, which is not alive. And we know this body, mind, intellect, and the world would be insentient if there was not spirit or matter or spirit or consciousness in us. If spirit or consciousness is not functioning through me, then I would be lying here flat and somebody will have to carry me to the nearest cemetery. So it is the consciousness that gives life. So Prakriti represents matter and Purush represents the consciousness, the spirit, and together they create the universe. So Arjuna says, I want to know what is Prakriti and what is Purush. I want to know both. Then I want to know what is Kshetram and I want to know what is Kshetragnyam. I want to know what is the field and I want to know who is the knower of the field. And we already talked about that, but Krishna will explain in more detail in the next few verses. Etat veditum icchami. Veditam means I wish to know. Etat, this I wish to know. Icchami, I have a desire, I have a wish to know what is all of that. What is Prakriti? What is Purusha? What is Kshetra? What is Kshetragnya? And then fifth and sixth is Jnanam and Jnayam. Jnanam means knowledge or also means the instrument of knowledge, and Jnayam is the goal. So I want to know what is the instrument of knowledge, how I can learn, and what is the goal of my life, or what is the goal of all knowledges. So he asks for six different. See, mostly when we take the exam, you know, I remember in my school times, not the multiple choice, but when you had these essay type questions you had to answer. So they would say, they would give you five questions, write any three out of five. So you could pick out of five, three, and then write a long essay about it. But Arjuna doesn't say, do any four out of six. He wants all six. Etad veditum icchami. I wish to know all of them. What is matter? What is Prakriti and Purush? Matter and spirit. What is the field? What is the knower of the field? And how can I reach this highest goal? And what is the highest goal? O Lord, O Lord of the whole universe, please teach me that, and because I am your student. So humbly he requests. So the question ends the first verse and kind of ties the whole chapter, because the entire chapter explains these six concepts in great detail. So we can end here. I think we can end with the closing prayer and then we can go into the hall. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhad Bhavet. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Harihi Om. Thank you very much.